Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Tuesday edition. That means John Najarian will be along in just a minute or so, and we'll talk about what's going on Wall Street. Also, Andrew Herman from DNA Info a little bit later, and we will visit the first rugby bar in Chicago. We've talked about rugby on the show from time to time and the fact that it is one of the fastest growing sports in the U.S., and now it's got its own bar on the north side. Maybe we'll see John Najarian there one day. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Love rugby.
Do you?
Cal had, Cal Berkeley, one of the many schools I attended, Steve, actually had, I think, national champions 35 out of the last 39 years. They are fantastic at rugby. They call them the blue, the old blue.
I know you played football even for the Bears. Did you ever play rugby?
I never have played rugby, but I enjoy the sport a lot. And like you say, incredibly popular, especially the sevens, which if for folks that haven't seen it, I think that's 35 minutes, and it's the fastest game. You know, it rivals, you know, games like hockey as far as how fast it moves.
Okay, so we're starting a little bit off track, and I'm going to keep it that way if you don't mind. Did you see the news about Al D'Amato today?
No.
Okay, wait. So it's sort of in keeping because Al D'Amato is a former Senate Banking Committee chair, as I recall, Republican senator from New York. He was on a flight yesterday from Fort Lauderdale to JetBlue. It was delayed for about 5 hours. Then they wanted people who had paid for the legroom seats to move because of weight distribution, and Al D'Amato ended up getting kicked off the plane.
We can still speak in this country, and what you're doing to me. And I want to tell you this. I make an appeal to all you people. You want to know what?
Yes.
Stand up for what's right.
He was calling on the people on the plane to march off the plane with him because he was being arrested for causing a disturbance.
Wow. Well, Alphonse D'Amato, as you say, a long time. I did not see that bit of news. I can certainly understand how you'd be upset if you were one of the folks who did pay for that extra legroom. And then all of a sudden they just unilaterally decide
take it away.
No, you're not going to get it. And I wonder if they had offered their money back on it or whatever. But flying is certainly not glamorous,
Al, as you know. He was always known for his lungs, and he still got them, apparently. We've talked a lot about the post-Trump bounce, or I don't know what it is we want to call it, but there was a number out today from the National Federation of Independent Business, Small Businesses, that shows the optimism index jumping again, the strongest since 2014. I don't know if that's still reflected on Wall Street. I mean, what's the mood there?
The mood is pretty good. It's a question now of course, how much did we borrow from the future? Because Wall Street's always a forward-looking mechanism. How much did we borrow from the future for either the policies, for instance, tax policy, and or rolling back of the Affordable Care Act, some of the responsibilities corporations might have? Those kinds of things, regulation in the banking sector, that people are looking at and projecting what stocks would be worth if indeed you had rollbacks or elimination of some of the rules and so forth. And I think there's a lot more room to go. So I think I'm joined by a number of folks in saying that unless there's a significant roadblock, I think they're going to see a lot more upside out of this market. 20,000 is just a number, but it seems that the financials this week could easily take us through that as they start their earnings reports.
The president-elect will have his first news conference since the election tomorrow. We'll broadcast it here at 10 on WGN Radio. I'm reading that people on Wall Street are watching, and I just wonder, I mean, a lot of times we hear about things that are important, and then in the wash it really wasn't all that important at all. Is what he says and the way he presents himself tomorrow important when it comes to the markets?
Sure. I mean, I'd never be dismissive of either this president or the sitting president, President-elect Trump or the sitting president. But I will say that we pay a lot of attention to his tweets. Obviously, those are 140 characters.
Right.
I expect that his answers tomorrow and his statements at his press conference will be considerably longer than that, because he's been up there in front of big crowds talking for hours, in some cases, in front of those big crowds. I don't think he'll give the press quite that same level of entertainment, Steve, but I do think that rather than the real short format Twitter stream that he's put out. I think this will be a longer description of both his goals and maybe some of the challenges, and we'll definitely be tuned in.
What's the biggest thing for us to watch this week? That, maybe the earnings reports from Chase and Bank of America later in the week, the hearings on Capitol Hill. What are you watching?
I think the financial stocks, like you said, Bank of America, Merrill, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, those are the most important, other than, of course, the press conference of a soon-to-be president.
Yeah.
Those are very important. And I think fixed income and currency trading, they always refer to it as FICC, F-I-C-C. When you hear those numbers, I think they will be through the roof. So it's not just interest rates. A lot of folks focus on that and think that that's how banks make money, which is true. They also make a ton of money from that foreign currency hedging that they do for the likes of McDonald's and all the other big international companies that don't want the fluctuations of the dollar, which has rocketed higher. If you did no hedging and you're selling in dollar terms, you're probably taking a hit for it. But if you've hedged, hopefully you're able to still pull a lot of that money to the bottom line. So the people they're hedging with, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, will really do well, in my opinion. Morgan Stanley and Citigroup as well.
I let Senator D'Amato take a little of our time, but do you have a real quick tip for us?
Well, we were buying a company that was actually started in Alton, Illinois, Olin, O-L-N. Today we were buying it. They started down there. They basically were making explosive charges for the miners back in the day. They still do.
Wow.
Ammunition or munition, and they also do a number of chemicals and things like that out of Olin Corp. O-L-I-N is the name, but the symbol is O-L-N. We were buying that today because institutions were coming in. I don't know if that's because they just see upside or because they anticipate some mergers and acquisitions. Of course, you never know until it happens, but there's been a lot of that this week already, and I think a lot more to come.
John Najarian, thanks very much. Great to talk to you today.
Likewise, Steve. Thank you.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info Chicago, and we talk about openings and closing, things like that. A couple of openings, well, or one opening and one transferring, mm-hmm. I guess, today. Let's start with, you know, we've talked rugby on the show before. It's the fastest growing sport in the U.S., and now it's got its own bar in Avondale.
So you know the difference between a ruck and a scrum and a maul then, huh?
I do. I buy the... No, I don't.
No.
No.
It's all forms of the various forms of that sort of chaos that you see where
right.
everyone's pushing and shoving in the middle. And one involves when the ball's on the ground. One involves when the guy has the ball and one restarts the whole thing.
But, all I know from rugby really is when I was at Marquette 30 years ago, the rugby team had a bar that we would go to on Saturday afternoons, and it was... Not that I played,
uh-huh.
but that the team would go to, and it was the green tree, and it was so foul that you had to wear special shoes. you wouldn't want to wear those shoes anywhere else.
Somehow rugby and drinking seem to go along. I don't know exactly how that works.
Chris Farley was on that team, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. All right, so this is up in the north side.
Yeah,
right?
So this is in Roscoe Village, 3614 North Damon. It has been the Black Rock Pub and Kitchen for a while. It is recently purchased by a guy from New Zealand, and he's renamed it the Rugby Club Pub. And as you say, it's kind of built and designed to attract people who are into rugby. You know, a lot of paraphernalia and stuff there. And
But they've been doing it all along.
Yeah, this was a new owner decided to sort of refocus the theme. It's always been a rugby club hangout.
Isn't Black Rock an Irish rugby team?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
I didn't know that. I just read it in the story.
in DNA Info?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, so anyway, so they have a bunch of TVs there, and whenever you go in, you'll be able to see rugby either live or taped, delayed. And as the story points out, that a lot of rugby games are, you know, from overseas, from Europe and Oceania and whatnot, and that therefore sometimes it has to open at 8:30 in the morning. So it's an excuse to, I guess, have a pint and maybe a meat pie or something.
A meat pie for breakfast.
Yeah, and then sort of get into rugby and the scrums and the mauls and the rucks.
Speaking of meat pies, there's this the Donnerman had a food truck, and they made some sort of Turkish sausage or something like that, right?
Right. So this is part of that whole sort of fight between the food trucks and the city. You know, they've been taking them to court, and the city's got all kinds of regulations about food trucks that you have to be so many hundred feet from a restaurant, and you can't be more than 2 hours in any location.
And they used to be a little more lenient than they've been lately.
Well, they have laws, and I think the Sun-Times did a story and followed them for a while and realized that a lot of the laws aren't being upheld, but still the food trucks are saying there's too many licenses. Now there's 60 food truck licenses, and so it's kind of a hassle to be own a food truck in Chicago. So these guys, the Donnerman, they had that's the name of it. They had a truck and a German Turkish sort of menu with something called Donner kebabs and something called currywurst. Anyway, they got kind of tired of all the hassles. And so what they have done is they are actually opening a bricks and mortar place, which is sort of unusual.
Yeah.
Yes, at 2849 West Belmont. And it's called the D-Men Tap. Now, they're not getting rid of the truck, but they're just not going to make it the main focus of what they do.
So the truck will still be around in the summertime.
Yeah, in the summertime. So.
And where they are is becoming sort of kind of a hip restaurant row.
In Avondale there, yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what the other restaurants are around there, but
I
know that whole area
I think Kuma's is there, right? The burger place is right in the neighborhood, not too far. And the other thing that I wanted to mention with this, they make these sausage things.
Yeah, but currywurst.
But poutine as well.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
They've got German food, Turkish food, and isn't poutine Canadian?
You know, I saw a picture of it the other day on a menu. I don't know where it came from.
Did your arteries get hard when you looked at the picture?
I looked at it and said, is that really something you eat, yeah, or what is that?
All right, I'll meet you up in Avondale. We'll try it out.
Okay, good deal.
Andrew Herman, read more at chicagoinfo.com or dnainfo.com/Chicago. This is The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on The Business Lunch. And for what it's worth, Kim, I think you should have your own theme music as well. But no, it's Suzanne Muchin in the house, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNradio.com, WGN Plus. Okay, so lots to talk about. You and I were sort of on Twitter this week about these all-female
workspaces.
I want to get to that, but let's start. Donald Trump is having his first news conference since the election tomorrow.
Right.
And he was tweeting out against Meryl Streep on Monday morning, which is just, you know, crazy to me. But what interested you was Kellyanne Conway's response or defense, where she said, try to focus on what's in his heart, not what he's saying.
Right. So let's just back up and say no one was surprised at the tweeting, right? I mean, everybody was sort of waiting for it. But the painful thing
is, it's just weird for him to say she's overrated.
It's horrible to go after somebody's like, that's her life. That's her art.
Aside from that, she's not overrated. Universally accepted as the best.
I said, right. Yeah. Like, she should have responded the way a 15-year-old would. Like, no, you're overrated. Yeah. But that is ridiculous. But his instinct to bash somebody on a personal level is what's troubling. But more troubling was when Kellyanne Conway comes out the next day, who I have to say, we know she's smart. She's savvy. She's in the know. She is. You can not like her.
No, she is, yeah.
She's painful, but she's all those things. And she says, don't listen to what he says. Look for what's in his heart. What does that even mean?
But I think that is, and I said this on the Mincing Rascals last week, we give much more import to his words than he does.
That's, you know, for sure.
What he says, he doesn't mean nearly as strongly as what we read. And one of us, one side, the public or the president, are going to have to move toward the other. And I don't know which it is.
The problem with not being a little loose with what you say is we don't know you. If we actually knew the actual what was in his heart, we could be better filters of what you say, but we don't know you. You're a television personality to most people. So I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think what she said should apply in this case because of what he said was pretty clear.
Yeah.
I mean, but I am a proponent. We're too often to try to catch people in their words. Oh, you said that.
Not only that.
Let's try to understand what someone actually intends. For example, Jenna Bush this week. You know, Jenna Bush was doing the Golden Globe
stuff.
Poor
Jenna.
And she said,
she called the movie Hidden Fences.
Because it's Hidden Figures.
Right.
And another movie out is Fences. They both have
No, they do. They have African-American themes and major people up for the awards.
Right.
Right.
And so she confused them. And, oh, my God, that's a terrible thing. Well, it's like, well, okay, wait a minute. What do you think, you know, she was being racist, or do you think she just made a mistake that any of us could make?
And don't you think that we also hold people responsible for what they said for too long?
Yeah.
So if you said something back in 1985.
Ask Jeff Sessions about
that. Exactly, right?
He's on Capitol Hill today.
Today, answering questions about things he said 20 years ago.
Okay, there's that. Let's go to, so we've talked as well from time to time about this march.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be a big march in Washington. But apparently there are marches all over the country?
All over the country. And actually, the Chicago one is growing. This surprised me, actually. I don't know why it surprised me, because I thought most of the focus was in D.C. But this is now at Grant Park on the 21st, 10 a.m. And they have this whole lineup of speakers. You know, you and I were talking before we got on about They didn't ask me either.
Okay.
And I'm a woman. Which is would clearly fit in better with this list they have, which I actually find problematic.
I'm often very womanly.
You on with me in particular.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
There's all the speakers are all women. I actually don't understand that, because if you're trying to get more support, your message out to the general public, why speak to the choir?
So why not engage men as well?
Of course.
Right.
And why not give men the opportunity, like you, who support women?
Right.
I'm not being sarcastic.
No, it's true.
Though, right?
It's an odd thing, because it becomes a gender issue. Like, they think only women support women's issues or women's equality or things like that.
Which we found out during this election was not the case. Women were not a single category. They didn't vote as a single category. I think this march would be better served to have male involvement on some level.
When is it?
It's the 21st, so it's next Saturday, 10 a.m.
Oh, yeah, there's
Grant
football.
Park. You don't.
There's football. I can't.
Oh, God. Did you really say that?
Well, I think it's the playoffs are going on.
I'm
going
to hold you accountable for saying that like 5 years from now.
I'm just saying I think it's NFL playoffs.
Yes, I think it is as well.
They don't have the inauguration against the playoffs, right? They're doing that on a Tuesday.
Well, then you don't have to go to the march.
Okay, good.
And you'll be missed.
Co-working spaces. Sort of the same thing. If you're having a women's issues march, why are there only women? So I saw this article this week about this co-working space in New York.
Called The Wing.
The Wing. And it's just women, and they make it that way. They exclude men.
Oh, yes.
And it's part of a trend. And I looked at it, and I tweeted it out to you and others. And I'm like, well, this isn't kosher to me. I don't think how... Two things. First of all, how can you have been excluded and ignored, and then you want to exclude and ignore an entire gender based on that?
So,
two,
yes.
Co-working spaces are supposed to be surrounding yourself with people who aren't like you.
I find your second point more valid than the first.
Okay, I find both of them incredible.
Okay. let me just go at the first one for a moment, which is just to say, look, there are country clubs, there are offices, there are settings, environments that are very specifically no women. And that's been the culture for years. So this is a reaction to that. You don't have to like it.
Okay,
but you can't say this is so unusual.
But that's like throwing rocks at people because you got rocks thrown at you.
It's still happening, though.
You know what I'm saying? The offense is that women were shut out. So how does shutting out men alleviate that offense? You're repeating the crime.
That's my second point, which I agree with. So on the second point of if you want to solve the problem. So on the first point, look, they have a right to do it. It clearly is fitting a need. On the second point, if you want to solve the problem, if you want to actually give women more opportunities to network, to take positions of leadership, to meet people they wouldn't otherwise meet, this does not make sense. I wouldn't work there.
And if you want to be recognized for talents with the boys and everyone else, that you're not going to be recognized if you're hanging out with other girls.
I don't want to be the best person who ever came out of the women's group, The Wing.
I love the article, how they described how it's decorated.
I know. Well, and also that they have blow dry people in there doing the women's hair. It's like, that would be nice.
See, it's like self-perpetuating
in many
ways.
I know, I don't like that.
Suzanne Mushin. Well, I like to surround myself with people who think unlike me, and that's why I hope you'll be back next Tuesday. We think mostly alike.
We do, but on your first point, I just want to reiterate, you were wrong.
Except for the times when you're incorrect. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Tuesday afternoon. As Winnie the Pooh would say, it is a blustery day. The wind gusts up to 50 miles an hour, as Kim said. I know there's some power outages because of that, some flight delays. My wife, Sharon, just gave me a text and said our neighbor's shed blew over the fence. So keep hold of your property today. I've been looking forward to talking to Ryan Founder for several days because he writes for the LA Times about the movie industry. Ryan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
My family is sick of me complaining, so I just thought I'd have you on to hear my complaints. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's talk about the movie industry, because when the year ended last year, they were talking about how it was, you know, going to be a record-breaking year at the box office. Then I read an article that you wrote that said, okay, but the numbers aren't quite as good as you might think. Explain that for me.
Yeah, we kind of poured some cold water on the record year headlines that came out at the end of the year. So basically, what we were looking at was, rather than just the top line box office number, which hit a record, you know, $11.3 billion, which is just slightly better than last year. But we wanted to look at studio profits and how this movie industry is really doing beneath the surface. So what we're basically looking at is higher marketing costs and lower home entertainment revenues pushing down profits for the movie industry.
And the idea that the numbers coming in, the big profit numbers or gross numbers, are coming from fewer and fewer films.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And so you're seeing more box office concentration at the top. You're seeing higher highs from the big movies like Captain America Civil War and Finding Dory. You're seeing lower lows with, you know, movies that cost a lot of money but virtually nobody saw, like Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
How much does this have to do with the fact that TV is now so good? Because here's why I ask, Ryan. The movies that they're making, which, as you described, are the ones that, you know, that are the superhero movies, are the ones bringing in the big cash, hold no interest to a 50-something guy like me. They kind of, I feel like, stopped making movies for guys like me. La La Land is an exception. Manchester by the Sea, an exception. But by and large, the big money ones aren't the ones that I'm attracted to. The stuff I like is more likely to be on TV these days.
Right. And I think the movie industry is seeing the effect of that, because you are seeing people decide, you know, as the cost of going to the movies goes up, you know, do you really want to take your family of four out to the movie theater for one of these popcorn pictures, or can you stay home and watch, I don't know, Walking Dead, football, you know, any of the things on Netflix now that are worth watching?
And so the industry is trying to figure out a way to get people to the theaters, and that brings us, the wait has been going on long enough, to my big beef. Seriously, my whole family's eyes roll every time I bring up the movies, because where I live, almost all of the theaters now have remodeled to these recliner seats and all of that. And people say, well, I love the recliner seats. Okay, I get that. But what they've also done is they've dramatically reduced the number of seats per theater. And what that means is that really where I live now, I can no longer say at half an hour before a film starts, say, let's go to the movies, because the movies are going to be sold out almost without exception. And I you know, that's keeping me from going to more and more movies. I went to one movie, tried to go a couple. Well, I never did, was able to see Moonlight. And then we saw, I never could get in. And then we saw Lion, and we literally, Ryan, went an hour early to get a seat. And it was a miss. It turns out there was, you know, there were plenty of seats in that one. I wasted another hour getting there early. So that's my beef, but is it working for the industry?
Well, we'll see. I mean, this is something that the cinema industry has invested a lot of money in, and I guess the idea is that a lot of the cinema industry's problems are out of their control because of a lot of it depends on the movies that come out.
Yeah.
But the stuff that is in their control is the actual experience of going to the movies, and one way that they've found to improve that experience is to put in more recliner chairs and make it so that you can take a craft cocktail or a craft beer into the theater with you.
I don't mind being somewhat uncomfortable eating greasy popcorn and leaving in 2 hours. I don't need shrimp scampi when I'm watching an action film.
I get it, but it seems to be working for at least some of the major theater chains.
All right, so that's off my chest.
It's not ending anytime soon. Yeah.
I know that. So that's one thing. And then another thing you write about, which is fascinating to me, is this idea that the movie companies might want to reduce the window, short the window a little bit on the time between a film's theatrical release and the time it's available in your house. Explain that for me.
Right. So at this point, we have to wait about 90 days between when a movie comes out in theaters and when we can buy it or even rent it on iTunes or Google Play or whatever. And the movie studios have a problem with that now, because what happens during that 90-day wait is people forget about the movie, or people who want to see the movie but don't want to go to the theater during that time period will just, you know, find it on the internet and pirate it. So the studios are trying to figure out a way to end that practice.
But the movie theater companies would imagine hate that idea, because there's less incentive to go out to the movie then.
Yeah, this has been probably the biggest point of contention between the studio system and the movie theaters over the last several years. Movie studios have tried to put out movies earlier, doing some experiments here and there with movies like Tower Heist, and Paramount did a couple horror movies last year this way, cutting down the window. But the theaters tend to protest.
Sure,
kind of,
which is understandable. Yeah. But so you write that one of the compromises might be that you could see a big blockbuster movie in your home after only 2 weeks after the theatrical release, but pay maybe as much as $50, which sounds like a lot, but it's not any more expensive than it would be to go to the theater.
True, especially if you're, bringing some kids along, or you've got bags of popcorn or the shrimp scampi that, maybe not for you, but, other people.
No shrimp scampi. And then another thing you write about more recently is the idea that, movies going to the home. What about TV shows that you see in your home actually going to the theater? Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're just starting to see the very beginning of what could be an interesting trend. IMAX just announced recently that it partnered with Marvel Entertainment and ABC Television to do the next Marvel show, Inhumans, and actually make it for and put it in the theaters when it debuts.
I would think people would pay money if you're a big Game of Thrones fan to go watch Game of Thrones on the big screen.
Yeah, and that's actually already happened. They did that a couple years ago, 2015. They put a couple episodes in IMAX theaters.
It's an amazing thing. It really is, because I like this, and I do feel that way, that the movies don't have as big of a draw for me as they used to, which is disappointing. But who would have ever thought when I was younger, certainly as a kid, that we would be talking about how much better TV is than film right now?
Yeah, some people are looking at the talent that's migrating from film to premium television and saying, hey, wait a minute, all these directors are going there. We need to do something to bring those people back into the movie business.
That's Ryan Founder. He writes about the movie business for the LA Times. Ryan, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it today.
Thanks again for having me.
And can you send me your screener of Moonlight?
I'd probably lose my job for that one.
I hope we can talk again soon. See you soon.
Yeah, most definitely.
Bye-bye. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.